WFYL 1180, streaming live for free worldwide.
Thank you for joining us. Remember, you can stream in worldwide. Your family matters. It really matters to God. As I prayed and studied this week and asked the Lord to place something important on my heart for you all, I wanted to just address the fact that God created marriage. He's the one that created family. But today, we are seeing that our families are under siege. So I took a look at my Bible, and I did a study. What does the Bible have to say about our families? What does God have to say? What is the message that He's bringing to us for our families? So I would like to share just a few of those verses with you. These are the encouraging Bible verses that I thought will give you hope and strength for your family this week. First of all, there were probably 100 verses that talk about family or father and mother, but I chose to share a few with you today. The first is Exodus 20. 12. Honor your father and mother so that you may live long in the land the Lord your God is giving you. This is the fifth commandment of our 10 commandments. It is the first commandment that starts relating to humans. What am I supposed to do? What is my role? The first four commandments were kind of giving us direction. What am I supposed to do with God? You know, it talks about do not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. Do not make other idols before your God. But this is the first commandment that shows up with how we're supposed to relate to humans. Family is the foundation of our nation and people. And when the institution of family starts to crumble, so does the foundation of the nation. We have seen that over and over again in the Bible. And again, the fifth commandment is reminding us to honor our father and mother so that we may live long in the land the Lord your God is giving you. I want to live a long, prosperous life. This is a commandment that he's giving to us. This is a promise for long life, for the child that honors their father and their mother. And God does not say to us, listen, this is important. God does not say, honor your parents if they're good parents, if they do everything right, if they're always obedient to God. That is not what this verse is telling us. There are really no conditions given to us by God. He is just commanding us simply to honor our fathers and our mothers. God knows that they're not perfect. We're not perfect either as their children. But He knows what works best. And we are commanded to honor them. It also does not give a time limit. It does not say, honor them while you're living with them in the house. This does not expire. We are to continue honoring them, even when they're not with us anymore. Our children are watching and listening to us. They listen how we talk about our parents, and we should be honoring them and respecting them. So just remember that, even after our parents are dead and not evil with them, don't speak evil of them, but honor them. And God will promise that we will live long in this land. My other favorite verse, it's actually my family verse, is Joshua 24:15. Choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your ancestors served beyond the Euphrates or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living. But as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord. Now remember, Moses is dead now. Joshua is now taking this standard for himself and for Israel and for his family. Probably a lot of the people whom he was leading wanted to go the way of the Amorites, the people that did not follow the God of Moses, the God of Israel. Remember, these Amorites were doing evil in the sight of God. And Joshua is making this statement, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. When a family determines to serve the Lord, listen, the Lord is determined to be a part of your family. He wants to be a part of your family. Remember, he created family. Families are stronger when the Lord is being considered when we make our decisions. We make decisions all day long. This is including movies that we watch with our children, the television channels that we decide to let in our house, internet, what magazines are coming on a daily basis into our homes, what other media is infiltrating our home. They should all be blessed by God. We should be deciding to serve him in all of these areas. You know, my family, we recently read a book as part of our devotional, and in the book it said, it recommended that we should have a family mission statement, understanding that as a Christian family, our purpose on this earth is not to do what's best for Carla Tedesi or do what's best for my husband or do what's even best for each one of my precious little girls, but that we are a family. And what does that look like to our neighbors, to our church? What is our mission statement as a family? So we sat down one night with our three little girls and we said, what does our family look like? What is a Bible verse, a family verse that we should have? And we actually chose this one, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And just talking about, we want to be a light in our world. So that might be something that you want to consider, sitting down with your family and giving your kids ownership. Let them feel invested. Let them write up your family mission statement. And I would hope that it would include your belief system in God. And we printed that up and we have that on our refrigerator. Another funny story is that along with this, this book recommended that we have kind of a contract with our little girls. You know, it's a family and families are to be governed. And we had a contract with the girls and it said, you know, these are our expectations. Something like, you know, we expect you to use kind words. And if you're not using kind words with your sister and, you know, we've already warned you and you do it again, now you're going to have a privilege taken away. And it might be a privilege like you don't have dessert after dinner. But again, this is a contract that, you know, can just be expectations. They can look and see what you are expecting from them because we are all part of this family. And a funny story, you know, my 11-year-old, who was probably 8 at the time, she said, I don't think I want to sign that contract. And of course, I grabbed the book and I'm looking through it and I'm thinking, I don't remember reading anything about when the children do not want to sign the contract that we all just discussed. And my husband and I said, Isabella, why don't you want to sign the contract? And her sisters at this point were swayed to to be on her side, which I thought, gosh, there's three of them and only two of us. And Isabella said, well, I don't know. I feel like if I sign that, it's really going to make me be in a lot more trouble way more often. So we talked to the girls and reluctantly they did sign the contract. And I have to be honest that we used that for a couple of weeks, but it actually did catch on really quickly what privileges were being taken away. But that's kind of a funny, cute story. But think about thinking outside of the box, how you and your family can serve the Lord. Psalm 103, 17 and 18 also says, but the loving kindness of the Lord is from everlasting to everlasting on those who fear him, and his righteousness to children's children, to those who keep his covenant and remember to do his commandments. There is so much truth packed into this one verse. I mean, really, I should have just taken a whole segment with you to dissect verse by verse, but God's righteousness can be handed down to our children, our grandchildren, and even our great-grandchildren when we obey him. Again, this is something that he's promising to us. When families are obedient to God, his righteousness will be extended into the third and fourth generations and even beyond. In Luke 1:50, it also reiterates this. It says, mercy extends to those who fear him, being God, from generation to generation. Deuteronomy 5:10 also couples with this. Showing love to 1,000 generations of those who love me and keep my commandments. That is what I want for my family and my future generations. And I know that is what you want as well. When I was studying this last night and thinking about families and thinking about legacies, I thought of the great Jonathan Edwards, the pastor who was born during 1703 and he died in 1758. If I could just share with you, he wrote hundreds of sermons. But he wrote something, The Nature of the True Virtue. This is what he said back in the early 1700s. Edwards wrote this. He brought out that family is given by God to us for our happiness. He also said that familial kind affections add greatly to our comfort in this world. This natural affection was given to us by our Creator, both to preserve the world and for our comfort. Think about that. Our families were given to us by God. Do we treat them as gifts? We should be. He also said this, the great Jonathan Edwards, every Christian family ought to be, as it were, a little church, consecrated to Christ and wholly influenced and governed by Christ's rules. Family worship is important. Devotions should be had. This is good family government. Understand, Jonathan Edwards understood that he was first and foremost a father, as did his wife, Sarah. She understood that first and foremost, she was a mother. Family was their first ministry. In his writing, A Faithful Narrative, he also pointed out the failure of family government as the reason that youth during his time in the early 1700s were unruly and disrespectful. Think about that. Back in the 1700s, he was claiming that the failure of families to rule themselves well was the reason that there was unruliness with the youth. What would he think about our families today and our youth today in 2014 if he thought that they were being naughty in the early 1700s? I can't even imagine. In addition, Edwards said, parents would one day stand before God to give an account whether they fulfilled their duty to their children. In one sermon, he even said, when parents lose their government over their children, the blood of their children will be required at their hands. Mom and dad, you are culpable. You are responsible for your child's behavior. Train them well. And when we do listen to this study that a gentleman named Winship did on Jonathan Edwards' descendants, 1,400 descendants of Jonathan and Sarah by the year 1900, okay, so we're going back 100 years ago, but this is what they found. 13 were college presidents, 65 were professors, 100 were lawyers, there was a dean of a law school, 30 became judges, 66 became physicians, one was even a dean of a medical school, 80 of their grandchildren, children, great-grandchildren became holders in public office, including 3 U.S. senators, by the way. And there were 3 mayors of large cities, governors of 3 states, a vice president of the United States, and a controller of the United States Treasury. They had written over 135 books and edited 18 journals and periodicals, all of his children, grandchildren, great children. I know that this is the kind of heritage that we all want to have for our children. So in closing, I would just like you to think about that. No one loves us more than God the Father, and He has given us our family. Our family is a gift to us. You can choose today, what will you do with this gift that you have given? And what you decide today is going to bless your family for generations, because God promises that. God's not dead, He's surely
alive. He's living on the inside. Thank you for joining us. We need to go to a quick commercial break, and we will be back right after this message.
Welcome back. Your Family Matters with Carla Dedessi here at 1180 WFYL, working for your liberty. Thank you for joining us. This is Your Family Matters with Carla Dedessi. We are here with Elaine Russo. She's the executive director at the Hope Pregnancy Center, which is located right in North Philadelphia on Broad Street. Good morning. How are you?
I am good. Good morning, Carla. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. You know, crisis pregnancy centers is something that's very close to my heart because I sit on the board of my local crisis pregnancy center. And I have to say that I'm a little bit jealous because you definitely have what I consider a better mission field. You're right there in North Philly.
It's true. We are right in the heart of some very at-risk demographics for, you know, unplanned pregnancy,
right,
and most certainly abortion.
And is there a planned pregnancy located right near you?
A planned parenthood, you mean?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Well, there's not just one. There are several like planned parenthood. We have about 15 abortion clinics within a 5-mile radius of where we are.
Oh, my goodness. You need a lot of prayer, and you are the lighthouse there.
We are. We really are. I mean, I see us as the emergency room for anyone, you know, experiencing a crisis pregnancy. You know, there are hospitals aplenty in the city, but really very few places like ours where, you know, it's the first place of response. We want to be, you know, really the first place of response for anybody who is considering an abortion. In the neck of our woods here, there are likely more abortions than live births.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since, you know, we're in a very urban setting and, you know, predominantly our clients are minorities,
mm-hmm.
You know, low socioeconomic status, not very highly educated, just very disenfranchised. And so
I recently saw an advertisement that had a beautiful African-American woman on the billboard, and she was pregnant, and it said, did you know that the most dangerous place for an African-American child is in the womb?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And you know this.
Yeah.
So that's very sad, and we want to help those women and their babies and the daddies that are having these babies. So thank you for doing what you're doing. Can you tell me a little bit about yourself? What gave you a heart to help with giving life?
You know, what gave me heart really is, it's who gave me heart. It is just God. I know it sounds almost a little trite, but it's my, 12-year in crisis pregnancy center ministry. Now, I started out in Boston where, you know, my husband originally is from, and we lived there for about, you know, several years. And for about 8 years there, I directed a center right in the heart of Boston as well. And then when we moved to Philadelphia, you know, God really just brought me to Hope. And I honestly, you know, from the get-go, it's been a steep learning curve of Him equipping me for this work. But there is just never, I think, a privilege as much as this seat He's given me at the very front row and forefront of what He's doing in the lives of babies, but more than that, the lives of women that carry these babies that we're trying to save. I often said that, you know, crisis pregnancy ministry is not just about saving the baby's life, but very much so the life of the woman and the man,
sure,
that are parents to this child as well. And the crisis pregnancy really is just an opportunity and a window into helping them really see the bigger picture here, that not only does the life of their baby have sanctity, but ultimately their lives as well.
Yes.
For they are made by the same God who created that baby in his fingerprints, which is imprinted all over them. And so for me, it was just, you know, the more I learned about this, the more I saw that, I really felt, you know, here I stand. I can do no other. It really is to stand in the gap for those that have no voice, but even for those who do, who are able to speak, i.e. the you know, living adults, they need someone to show them that there are other choices, other options for their lives as well.
Yes. So share with me, what are the services that your center provides? Let's pretend that I am a 16-year-old coming to you and I have just discovered that I am pregnant. Mm-hmm. Walk me through what you would do with me.
You know, the very first thing is we just want to assure her that there is help available and that we're here for every step of the way. You know, sure, we do provide free pregnancy tests, free ultrasounds, all of that, but nothing replaces that one-on-one, which is counseling that she gets when she gets here, you know, the compassionate voice, the first time maybe that she's shared with anybody that she could be pregnant or that she is pregnant. And how we receive her and we receive the news is just critical to, you know, her decision with the pregnancy. So, you know, the first thing we do, at the front lines is just to minister to her with the love of Christ and to just shower that love and compassion upon her. So we offer free counseling support, and then pregnancy tests, obviously, you know, free tests to help her find out whether or not she truly is pregnant. And then the ultrasound, that's really the capstone of a lot of what we do here. You know, it's a no-brainer that when you connect a woman with a very tangible visual of her unborn child, and more than that, when she sees that beating heart and hear the heartbeat, that can change some things for her. You know, does every woman who sees an ultrasound decide to continue with, you know, the pregnancy? Absolutely not. I mean, especially for the demographics that we minister to, they are just so vulnerable and so at risk that oftentimes they come in, you know, just dead set on having an abortion. And with that, it's you know, a lot more difficult to help them see another way. But, you know, even in that situation, those situations, we want to assure them that, you know, we still are here for them. And we always tell them, whatever you decide, you know, We are here for you. What we will not and cannot do is we do not refer for abortion. We make that very clear when they come in. And we obviously do not offer contraceptives as well. But, you know, whatever she decides, we truly just feel that even if she goes through with an abortion, she needs even more than before our counseling. You know, the ministry to her does not stop, because even though the life of a child might not be, quote, saved, you know, by us, we want to save her life. We still want to minister to her and make sure that she finds healing and redemption and to not walk down that same path again.
Mm-hmm.
Because so many of our clients come to us having had at least one, if not, you know, more commonly, more than one abortions in their past. So we see this is a pattern. Someone has to just go in there and break that cycle, you know, and break that stronghold in their life. So
do you sometimes
want to do that?
Think that these girls are using abortions as a form of birth
control? Like a
control.
Birth control.
Right.
Yeah, I mean,
which is
so
very
often
sad.
It is.
For
and,
them,
and they
as
don't
well
think
as
twice.
The baby.
Mm-hmm. You know, we have many clients who, you know, when they tell us how many abortions they've had, it's hard to maintain that straight face in the counseling room and not to be like, you did what?
Right.
I mean, I remember a girl, she said five or maybe six abortions, and the last one was just, you know, a couple of months before she came in here, and now she's, again, potentially pregnant. And with that, you know, we just want to be like, wait, hold on a minute here. Before we even do the pregnancy test, let's talk a little bit about the trajectory of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And then to really help her dig down into what is causing her to continue to make these, you know,
poor choices.
Exactly. Absolutely poor choices.
Do
but
you
she doesn't
find
see it?
Mm-hmm. Do you find in your counseling that many of these women do not have a dad in their life to give them self-worth?
Absolutely.
Okay. And then they're
trying. Many of them come from single-parented households.
And they're trying to get that self-worth from a random man in their life. Do you try to teach them that God can be their father and God can be the one that gives them that you know, fulfills that space that they're trying to fill.
Yeah. And, you know, and sometimes they will even tell us, you know, they're like, yeah, I know I'm looking for, you know, like the quote, love in all the wrong places. Mm-hmm. But it's almost like that codependency is so strong or whatever it is. You know, so often they're in relationships that most everyone would classify as abusive, you know, if not physically, certainly emotionally. You know, like you've been with a man for how long and he's married and he's given you no intention whatsoever that there's a future with him, but yet you continue with this. So why? You know, how do we help you?
Elaine,
we understand that there are entrenched things in place that we want to help her with.
Elaine, you bring up a brilliant point. I was just reading an article that said that the majority of women that do have abortions have a history of some kind of physical and emotional abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what you're sharing here, is that usually these women are with men with whom they should not be, or they are, sometimes it's the man that wants them to go and have the abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And if we could just help them to see themselves the way that Jesus Christ sees them, which I know that you're doing. And I also want to step back and return to something that you said earlier, which is the services that you provide and the education, and you show them the ultrasound and you educate them. Many of them probably don't know that at 3.5 weeks, there is a beating heart. This is a live being inside of them that was created by God. So yes, now if they are choosing to end a heartbeat, which is ending a life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that now we also have science telling us that these babies inside of their moms do feel pain.
Mm-hmm.
We have the science that shows us that the tiny baby trying to move away from those tools that the abortionists use.
Absolutely.
And these are things that you and I need to share with the world, really, because Planned Parenthood, they are not telling these vulnerable women and these vulnerable boys and these grandparents that bring these young girls to these Planned Parenthoods. Planned Parenthood is not talking to them about the baby that is growing and is viable inside of them. They're talking about tissues, and they're talking about, oh, no, it doesn't really look like a human being. Those are lies.
Mm-hmm.
Can you comment on that at all? Do these girls come to you really not having a clue that it is a life that is growing inside of them, or do they think it's a fetus or tissue or a scab?
A bag of cells.
Correct.
Yeah. I don't even think they give it too much thought, frankly, because it's a defense mechanism, right? That, you know, if you can convince yourself that what I'm doing is just, it's nothing. And, you know, what's really interesting, too, is I'm realizing more and more in this ministry, especially in North Philadelphia, like I mentioned earlier in the program, our clients are predominantly minorities, predominantly African-American women.
Yes.
And the whole abortion issue has even its roots, I think you can tie it with the civil rights movement, in that they have been given through, you know, Roe versus Wade and all the laws that have been passed since then, the power to do what they will with their body and with their choices. And if you look at, you know, if you're coming from a history of, you know, for the longest time ever, you weren't given the power to do what you want. You know, you were disenfranchised through and through. But now this is a very insidious form of, quote, empowerment, right? To say, you can decide, you do what you want, and you make the, quote, right choices for yourself. And so I think because it's been marketed that way, to especially African Americans and to minorities, as you know, again, back to the term I keep using, empowerment issue by parenthood, by the pro-choice folks, that it's become so much more accepted within the community, you know, to be able to exercise power.
Okay.
In when you haven't had power.
I never thought about that
yourself.
Perspective again before, but it's super interesting, and I think that you're right. And I, again, I don't want to make this a black-white issue. I mean, we do have the statistics that prove that, yes, our precious African-American babies are at higher risk, but certainly the other day I was driving through the main line, and there's a big, huge Planned Parenthood there.
Oh, yeah,
so
absolutely. Yeah,
this crosses everything, and
it does.
And we need to speak out against it. And, you know, I love the quote from Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who mm-hmm. said, you know, silence in the face of evil is evil itself. God mm-hmm. will not hold us guiltless.
Mm-hmm.
He will not, those of us who do not speak and we do not act, we are really acting, aren't we? So that brings me to the churches in North Philly.
Mm-hmm.
How do they receive you? Because I think mm-hmm. that there's so many churches in North Philly, a lot of fabulous churches. And then I think there's a lot of churches that are just cultural churches.
Yeah.
That personally, I don't think that they're nudging our precious congregations to a closer relationship with Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yeah. tell me, how are they receiving you? Because I think that they should be embracing you and helping their congregation see life.
Yeah, that has been an interesting thing. But before I even address that, I just need to, you know, give a little bit of context for how the Hope Center was founded. We were founded by the Reverend Pastor Herb Lusk, who is
I love
the
him.
Pastor of Greater Exodus Baptist Church. Yeah, he's one of the most inspiring, you know, people I've ever, you know,
he's
had the
awesome.
Privilege of meeting.
He used to be an Eagle, right? An Eagles player?
Yes. Yes. He was the very, very first professional athlete, certainly in the NFL, to kneel, you know, at whenever he scored a touchdown to give praise and glory to God back in the 70s. So I always say he's the, you know, the first Tebow before
That's
there ever was even Tebow, and they call him the praying tailback. But from the last 30 years, he has devoted and poured out his life work into North Philadelphia through Greater Exodus and through People for People, which is an organization he founded to empower, you know, the inner city folk, and has brought so much change in North Philadelphia as a result. But about 6 years ago, he realized this issue of abortion, it's an epidemic. We're living in an inferno. And to not be a part of the problem is to not be a part of the solution is to be a part of the problem. And so he said, what can I do? And, you know, he put good to his word. I tell you, when he founded the Hope Center, he was heckled by people, you know, within his church, folks who got up and left in the middle of service and said, why are you, you know, committing our money, our resources to what's a woman's issue? Just, you know, mind your own business and keep out of it. And that's because, you know, when we look at statistics again, abortion so keenly affects this community that within the churches especially, you know, the statistics are the same. 3 out of every 5 women have had at least one abortion. And so how many women are sitting within our pews suffering in silence? But also pastors within the urban churches are, you know, aware of that. And I've met many who are very hesitant to kind of touch the topic even with a 10-foot pole because you get some severe knee jerk. You know, there's just almost like no safe ground with that. But for Pastor Love, he goes, you know, it's not about making people feel comfortable in church. It's about preaching love and redemption, but at the same time, how you can, you know, change and stem this tide. And so he found the Hope Center. But, you know, in the last 3 years that I've been the director, I've been very much, you know, trying to outreach the urban churches. And it's hard. It's really hard. And, you know, there have been some pastors who, you know, one of Pastor Mark Abrams at the Calvary Chapel in North Philadelphia has been amazing and stepping forward and saying, you know, I will do whatever. You know, we need to come alongside you all. But I've also met many who, you know, just will not come close and lend, you know, help to this ministry.
Well, I just
because I think it's such a hard topic. Yeah.
It is a hard topic. But, you know, sin is all sin, whether we mm-hmm. gossip or we've had an abortion. You know, we're all sitting in these churches on Sundays and we look to our pastors to shepherd us. We are their flock.
Yeah.
And the pastors must stand up for the fatherless and they must stand up and speak to our inalienable rights, which start in the womb. I mean, we know all of the Bible verses that God knew us when we were in the womb, and he created us perfectly. He formed us there. And I know that that's many of us as Christians and pro-lifers, that is what we cling to, that we do not have the right to snuff life out. We do not have mm-hmm. that right. And mm-hmm. I just applaud the pastors that are standing up and that they're sharing that, because where would we be, Elaine, if the pastors and the Christians didn't stand up to abolish slavery?
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah, exactly.
We have to look to William Wilberforce, who 20 years, he actually died before slavery was abolished. But mm-hmm. these are these are issues that God cares about.
Mm-hmm.
And I just applaud you. Thank you for making us aware of this. And I do want to talk to you right before I let you leave about the abstinence program that you have happening, because I believe that abstinence is the best way. And just talk to us about that. How is it received? Do you have a curriculum that you use?
Yeah, we right now, a lot of abstinence counseling is done one-on-one. We, you know, try making presentations before, but are not very well received within the public school setting around North Philadelphia. But we realized as we did this that, you know, even if we're to commit our resources just to working with the clients who come to us around abstinence, that's more than, you know, that's our primary focus at this point. So yeah, the curriculum that we use, well, first of all, it is a Bible. That's our curriculum, you know, and trying to help them understand God's
design. It's biblically based. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's not about coming at them, you know, by being on the head with the Bible and saying you're living a sinful life, but really helping them to understand that whether or not you believe in God, the fact is, consequences of sexual, of living in a non-integrous way with your sexuality affects everybody. But, you know, one of my favorite analogies I share with my clients is that, you know, you don't have to believe in God to know that if you jumped off a tall building, you're going to get hurt. The laws of gravity apply to you whether you fear God or not. In the same way, the reason why God hedged, you know, different protective barriers around in place for how one should exercise their sexuality, it's because his desire is to protect people. So you don't have to believe in him or not to reap the consequences, emotional and physical, of making choices that are, you know, not constructive with regards to relationships and sexuality.
Right. And let's talk about the, you know, we can talk about the sexually transmitted diseases that probably many of these women and men who come to see you have, and how sad that is, because these are things that they have forever. And these are things that alter their life. It is the more loving thing to teach them, just wait until you're protected in marriage.
Yeah.
And then you can have all the marvelous fun you want, right, Elaine?
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, a lot of them have not seen, you know, anything at all that reflects a positive model of marriage.
Correct.
So it goes into teaching that as well. And ultimately, you know, we're not about just simply risk reduction here. It's about risk elimination. So I tell them that, you know, condoms, birth control, well, you know, not even birth control really, because a lot of STDs, you know, are transmitted from skin-to-skin contact. You know, those could maybe reduce your risk temporarily. It doesn't eliminate your risk. My husband's a pediatrician in at St. Christopher's Hospital, which is one of the, you know, city's hospital that really, which is a very at risk, you know, and economically depressed demographic as well. And at the hospital, he's one of the very, very few, you know, voices that want to promote and is, you know, pushing to promote abstinence with the patient pool, especially the adolescents that come through the clinics, because a lot of the attendings that, you know, he's met just, you know, give them a bag of condoms and send them on their way. And my husband's like, you know, that can't be it. You know, there's got to be, if we are given the platform to be able to speak truth and light into these young folks, you know, how can we not do that? You know, and God's given us a mantle to be able to share that. So let's do it. So at the Hope Center, we really see this as a window of opportunity. We are partnering with another organization to provide free STD testing at our center. And for us, the reason to do that, obviously we want to provide our clients with the tools to be healthy, but they can go really anywhere in the city and get a free STD test. Mm-hmm. You know, but we want to do it because we see it as a window to allow us to sit down with them and talk to them about what they're doing with their lives. So it's not just about offering a free test, but really to be able to show them that, you know,
God's way is better, really.
Exactly.
You can have self-control. We don't need to have immediate gratification all the time. You know, I have three little girls, and we're getting a little off subject here, but the big thing now is that they want all these little girls and little boys now to get Gardasil. And I couldn't believe that I have to have this conversation in front of my 12-year-old and the pediatricians, but the Lord just laid it on my heart that I needed to have this discussion with this woman who is telling me that I just need to have my daughter have this vaccination. And I said to her in front of my 12-year-old, well, can you tell me, is this going to prevent STDs? No, it doesn't prevent STDs. Is it going to prevent unwanted pregnancies? No, it's not going to prevent unwanted pregnancies. And I said, I have a much higher standard. She knows that we're Christians because I've had many conversations in love with my pediatrician. But I said, we have a higher standard. It's a biblical standard. It's God's standard. We are teaching abstinence in our house. Now, you know, I don't know what the future holds for my three precious little girls, but that is the standard in our house. And that's what we're teaching them. It's God's standard. And like anything that we do outside of God's rules and God's protection, there are consequences. And I think that being promiscuous for boys or girls, sometimes the consequences are really huge and very big. And, you know, so anyway, I am all for abstinence programs, and I think that the Philadelphia school system is very foolish for not allowing you to come in and talk to their children about this, especially with, you would think that they would be, you know, holding your hand and just linking arms with crisis pregnancy centers so that their 12, 13, 14-year-olds weren't getting pregnant and, you know, they could put that off for as long as possible so that they could finish school.
Yeah, and we do it for free too, you know.
Right.
I'm like,
tell us about, do you have any fundraisers going on in the near future?
Yeah, we just had our banquet a month ago, and in the fall we are, you know, planning for a run, a 5K run to help raise support. So that's all on our website. You know, more information will come on the website, which is hopecenterpartners.org.
Okay, so for our listeners, they can go to your website, which I did go to. It's beautiful. It's very easy to navigate through. And is there anything else that you'd like to say to our listeners today, Elaine?
Oh, please just stand in prayer for us. I mean, that is the primary thing. And if God moves, you know, anyone listening to want to come walk alongside us, I tell you, it's a real joy and pleasure. Like I said earlier, it is being given a front row seat at what God can do in you and through you. And so, you know, if anyone would like to find out more or even come help in any capacity, please just get in touch with me. More information again on our website, hopecenterpartners.org.
Elaine, leave us with a hopeful story. What is the best miraculous story that you have seen working at the Hope Pregnancy Center?
There are so many, but a recent one, you know, we had a woman come in determined to have an abortion, and she happened to walk in for an appointment. She didn't even make an appointment. She just walked in right when there was a prayer meeting happening, you know, in my office, just interceding for everything that was going on in the center. And so when she came in, her counselor came, knocked on my door, and said, please pray for this girl. She's very determined to have an abortion. So, you know, we were praying for her, and she left and was going to come back the following week for an ultrasound. And when she came back the following week, she still was wanting to have an abortion. The only reason she came back was because she lives in a homeless shelter that's across the street from us, and they have to leave every day from 9 to 5 from the shelter, so she had nowhere to go. And she thought, well, you know, I'll just go across the street, place to sit and get the ultrasound, whatever. I'll just bring that test, the results, and go get the abortion. And when she went to the ultrasound room and, you know, was in the ultrasound, then I was in there with her, and as soon as our nurse, you know, put the image on the screen, we saw that, you know, there was something different. There wasn't just one beating heart, but there were two beating hearts.
Wow.
And so she was expecting twins. And that, the silence in the room was just electrifying. I mean, she burst into tears right away, and through tears she was smiling. So it was, you know, she didn't know whether to laugh or to cry. It's the amazement, thinking, oh my gosh, I'm having twins. But also the shock and panic of thinking, if I didn't think I could, you know, having twins definitely made it harder for her to contemplate an abortion because she knew that she would be taking two lives. But at the same time, having twins made it harder for her to figure out how she was going to do this. Well, long story short, she still is pregnant. She's almost into her third trimester now, and we're continuing to walk with her through all this. We found, helped her find a job a few weeks ago, but it's just tough because she has a little girl who's not quite 2 years old yet. And, you know, in a shelter. So
Is she aware of Wayne Hall in Germantown?
She is.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
We've given her all the info.
Good.
I think a lot of times there's a huge long wait list for any of these housing programs.
Okay.
So it's been tricky, but, you know, she is getting support. She's been here just about every day, you know, just checking in, talking to us, shoulder to cry whenever she needs it. You know, we'll have to find childcare for her little girl, too. So, you know, it's not just intervening to save those two unborn lives, but really we want to, you know, help her ultimately find God. And she's come back to church again.
That's,
you know,
the best
Greater
part.
Exodus. Yeah, and so she's attending faithfully as far as we know, and just really trying to walk alongside. So please keep her in your prayers as well.
I will keep her in my prayers. And thank you so much for just sharing on your family matters today, that God cares about every family. So thank you so much. God bless you.
You as well, Carla. Take care. God bless.
Take care. Bye.
Working for your liberty right here in Philadelphia. Broadcasting freedom, shining light throughout the tri-state area. Streaming freedom, shining light from Philly to the nations. 1180 shining forth, we are the Freedom Station. WFY.